This is your AEW Revolution 2022 review. I am the Solemn Monster. It is officially Monday morning. Hope you guys are doing well. That was a hell of a pay-per-view. From top to bottom, one of the best AEW pay-per-views that the company has ever produced. It was a tremendous show from top to bottom. Coming into the show tonight on paper, it looked like a very strong show. All of the key matches that you would expect to deliver, delivered in a big way. The recurring theme of a lot of these AEW pay-per-views does tend to be that they are very long, as evidenced by how late we are coming on the air here tonight. They only do 4 pay-per-views a year, so they try to cram and squeeze as much into them as they possibly can. But I think you noticed it in some of the later matches on the show where the crowd was clearly tiring out a little bit before they rose back up for the main event. So it was a very long show, and I think it would have been better if it would have cut. You probably could find a couple of matches you could have cut from the show. The Jade Cargill match didn't need to be on the show. The 6-man tag tornado match, you could have had that as a television main event. But top to bottom, an excellent show. Hangman Page still the AEW world champion, retaining in the main event over Adam Cole. Sting, what can I say about this guy? He is an absolute madman. You know, Sting, for those who don't know, Sting is going to be 63, I believe. He's 62 now. Sting turns 63 in 2 weeks. I think his birthday's actually a few days before The Undertaker, funny enough. Almost 63 years old, and this man is doing a balcony dive. Out of his mind. Out of his mind. Nobody can say this guy isn't trying to earn his paycheck. So Sting is an absolute madman. We know Darby is. The match I was most looking forward to on this show, one of the matches, was Bryan Danielson against Jon Moxley. Was very much looking forward to this match. They had their match. I was very happy with it. It was a very physical affair. Blood was spilled. You knew that coming in. We got a nice surprise at the end of that match, because one thing I was not expecting was that we would have an appearance, and it is official. I mean, it's not official until you see the graphic. And so I was waiting to see if Tony Khan was going to put the graphic up on Twitter, and sure enough, he did. There it is on your screen right there. William Regal is All Elite. That I did not expect on this show tonight, let alone him coming out to try to unite two of the men that he helped mentor early in their careers, Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley. So when he came out on this show, one of the biggest pops of the night, if not the biggest reaction of anything on the entire show, was that man right there in his suit walking to the ring. That was a great moment. Seeing Regal on this show was a tremendous moment. That, to me, was the highlight of the entire show, was seeing him come down to the ring. I thought that was just tremendous. And the possibilities now of him being aligned in some way with Danielson and Moxley going forward is just fucking fantastic. So that was my favorite part of the entire night. As far as my favorite match, the dog collar match, CM Punk, MJF, was exactly what I expected it to be, with a nice little payoff there in the end with Wardlow. This is a big night for Wardlow. He won the Face of the Revolution ladder match. He's going to get a TNT championship match in a few weeks. And tonight was the night that, you know, he came out during that dog collar match and he basically said to MJF in so many words, the hell with you. And he got also one of the biggest reactions on the entire show. So again, fired on all cylinders. There's a few things that, didn't quite go right in some of the matches, but on the whole, an excellent effort. Hit that like button. I know we've got super chats coming on in here. I'm going to try not to keep you guys too long because it is late. But we're going to have some fun with your messages. I'll read all of them a little bit later on in the stream. We'll do a little super chat party here at the end. And maybe if we have time, we'll do some Be the Booker. We'll see. But let's get into it. Let's not waste any more time. We have 3 matches on the buy-in pre-show, starting with Chris Statlander against legit Layla Hirsch. That was the match that opened up the buy-in pre-show. Hirsch was working over Statlander's left arm, and Hirsch slipped up at one point. There was a springboard move that she was going for, and she kind of slipped up a little bit. Statlander, though, recovered by turning it into a body slam. Statlander hit a blue thunderbomb for two, and they fought out onto the apron. Hirsch reversed the Big Bang Theory attempt into a Hurricanrana to the floor. And so these two were going at it. They were having a pretty good match here. You know, back in the ring, there was a Michinoku driver by Chris Statlander. Hirsch was having a lot of trouble with her. And so at one point, she ended up on the floor, and she reached down under the ring, and she pulled out, you know, they have those wrenches that are used to tighten the ring ropes. And so she grabbed the hold of the wrench, and when the referee's attention was diverted, I don't know what the referee was doing. The referee was on the other side of the ring. And Statlander went to reach out to grab her, to bring her back inside. She whacked her with the wrench, and Layla Hirsch got in the ring, hit a moonsault press off the ropes, and got the pinfall. So she wins the match. Red Velvet runs down afterwards to check on Statlander. You know, good stuff from these two. It was a little minor hiccup there in the middle, but good stuff from these two. One thing I forgot to mention that also put a smile on my face when this show was over, I was counting after each match. I was looking back at my predictions, and I was saying, oh, I'm doing pretty good here. Who's going to be the spoiler here on this show for me? And then the show came to an end with Hangman retaining the championship, and I realized that I got a clean sweep. I went 12-0 in my predictions on this show. Now, there have been pay-per-views in the past where I've had clean sweeps, but those are pay-per-views that have had 5, 6, 7 matches. Never 12. So I set a new record for myself tonight. You know, AEW was plugging DraftKings all night long. I think I should have been doing some DraftKings tonight. I could have made some scratch. I'm pissed off now. 12-0 in my predictions. Beat that. You can't do it. So Tony Schiavone was in the ring next. He was getting ready to introduce a very special guest. And we hear the theme music for a very familiar face, the former AEW World Champion Kenny Omega, who has not been seen since the Dynamite that followed Full Gear in November. He went away. He's been licking his wounds and trying to recover from various injuries that he has been dealing with over the past year. But instead of Kenny Omega, we got Don Callis, or as Excalibur referred to him here, the walking bag of human refuse. Kind of like that nickname for him. I think it fits. He said the crowd doesn't get Omega tonight. Instead, they get him. And he said the fans should be thankful for Omega's world title run, but instead they just begged him for more, and he ran himself into the ground. Callis said that it would be a great night, though, because the Young Bucks were going to walk out as the tag team champions, and since Omega's not here, he said that he's confident that Adam Cole will be the next AEW world champion. He's going to make a fantastic transitional champion until Kenny Omega comes back. Uh-oh. Planting another seed. Planting another seed. QT Marshall was out next with the returning Anthony Ogogo. It's the first time I've seen Ogogo since he went Ogogo back to the UK, I guess. Probably, what, since the match with Cody, I guess? That was in May, I think, of last year. We haven't seen this guy. So he came out. Aaron Solo was there. Caveman Camarado. All three of them immediately went back to the locker room. So they walked out just in time to show their face and turned around and went right back to the dressing room. So QT had a mic in his hand, and he comes down to the ring and says that he's going to show this next man coming out here what cold-hearted really looks like. And of course, he was referring to his opponent here tonight on this show, that being Hook. Where are all my hookers at in the chat? I know you guys are here. Hook comes out, hits a T-bone suplex, sends QT out to the floor. QT caught Hook with a cheap shot to the throat, and he got more offense on Hook in this match than anybody else has up to this point. Hook's only had a handful of matches, but QT got more offense on him, and he made him sell. We saw Hook sell more in this match than he has up to this point. So Marshall went up to the top. Hook hit the ropes and crotched him, and hit another suplex. Marshall caught him with an elbow, tried for a diamond cutter, but Hook avoided it. He got the red rum locked on, took him down to the mat, and he locked on the body scissors, and QT tapped out. So Hook racks up another win, 5 minutes, actually just, I think it was a few seconds shy of 5 minutes is what this match went. But, you know, look, QT was a good opponent for him. It was an easy win. At some point, you know, Hook has to sell a little bit more. He's got his matches have to go a little bit longer. So this was a little longer than usual, but another win for Hook. Then we had the House of Black. This may have been the sleeper match of the night. Not that I expected this to be anything but a good match. But this match was even better than I expected it to be. Malakai Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews against Pac, Pentagon Dark, and Eric Redbeard, making his in-ring AEW debut here tonight. All three members of the House of Black came out. Badass entrance. They all got the skull masks on with the antlers. Same for Death Triangle. Very cool entrance. Penta comes out. We've got the shovel in his hand. Alex is dressed up as Darth Maul. He's in his Darth Maul. He's got the scythe and all that kind of stuff. Redbeard got a separate entrance of his own. And I have to say, I love the interaction early in this match between Penta and Matthews. And that is a singles match that I hope we get to see on TV at some point. I think that would be really good. Penta caught Malakai with his package pile driver on the apron. Penta rolled Black back inside the ring, covered him, but the referee didn't count because Black wasn't the legal man. And it's funny I see that because if you watch the rest of the pay-per-view, if you watch like the tag team title match and some of these matches, it's like, when do the rules matter? I mean, these referees, they either don't enforce the rules or they have a difficult enough time because everybody's just doing whatever they want. But I love how in this instance, no, you're not the legal man, so it doesn't count. So Matthews, instead, he came up from behind Penta and hit his curb stomp variation that he does. It didn't look very good. It looked like he was struggling with him at first. It just came off very awkward. Pac broke up the fall. So Pac set up for a move on Buddy. But Black took out Pac with a kick to the head. Redbeard came in. Again, everybody in this match, they had a chance to shine. All of the heels, Pac had his moments. Penta had his. And Redbeard, too. I will say Redbeard looked really good here in this match. And the crowd was into him. They were happy to see him. So he looked good. I don't think he needs to be on the roster full time. I don't think they need to bring him in as a full-time member of the roster, but I wouldn't mind seeing him occasionally here and there beyond tonight. But he went for a choke slam for the finish. He went for a choke slam to Malakai Black. Black sprayed mist at his face. Matthews hit Redbeard with a knee to the head, and Brody King followed with a Fire Thunder driver, and Black covered Redbeard for the win. Too much to recap. That's the nuts and bolts, bare bones of what took place in this match. What a fucking match. What a match. I love this match. This match was so much fun to watch. Way more fun than I even expected it to be. And it went almost 20 minutes, so they gave it a lot of time, more time than I thought they would have on the pre-show. But as I predicted, Redbeard, who I figured was not signed full-time, was just in there to take the losing fall. And indeed, the biggest man in the match was the one who took the losing fall. So there were people on social media, well, you know, they're just scraping the bottom of the barrel now. They're just bringing anybody in from WWE. First of all, that's not true. But second of all, I never got the impression he was in full-time. You know, Rey Fénix is almost ready to come back. You know, we're going to have him at the House of Glory show. The Lucha Bros are wrestling the Briscoes on Friday night in Queens. So Rey Fénix is just about ready to come back, but he wasn't ready in time to be on this show. And they needed somebody who could A, fill the spot, and B, eat the pin. That's it. That was his only role in this match. Now, if his performance tonight earns him more work and more shots in AEW, I think that's great. But he served his purpose. And I thought this match was excellent. That was just a tremendous match. So the pay-per-view opened with Jim Ross forgetting what city they were in. The very first thing we heard on this pay-per-view was Jim Ross introducing us to the show, Revolution. We are live from... Tony, where are we? Tony Schiavone had to back him up. And remind him that, in fact, they were in Orlando tonight. So that was a hell of a way to start the show. And the pay-per-view opened with Chris Jericho one-on-one with Eddie Kingston. Shout out to my boy, Bret Hart, who just became a Sound Off superstar. Sound Off channel member. Welcome, Bret Hart. I do love me some bread. He's combining two of my favorite things in the world, bread and Bret Hart. He has somehow fused them together. I like it. So we have Chris Jericho against Eddie Kingston. You talk about matches that I was expecting to be good, but not necessarily as good as it turned out to be. This match would be at the top of the list tonight as well. This was an excellent way to open the show tonight. And it's not the match that I would have opened with. But when it was over, I thought, man, that was a hot opener. That was the perfect match to get this night started. Kingston speed walked to the ring. He wasn't wasting any time. He came right into the ring. As soon as the bell rang, he dropped Jericho right on his head, right on the top of his head with a half and half suplex. And by the way, I mentioned this on the podcast earlier, and it was evident tonight. Jericho, the difference physically in Jericho now as compared to even a month ago is like night and day. So Jericho has, he's definitely looking slimmer than he has in quite some time. Had a little health scare a few months ago when he was touring with Fozzy over in the UK. I'm guessing that he has laid off the booze, but he's looking good. Jericho's looking svelte compared to how he was just a few months ago. So if there was any debate about whether or not Jericho was going to be a heel in this match, you can put that to bed because he was at one point just blatantly flipping off the fans. Jericho fought out of some machine gun chops, got an eye poke, and Kingston returned the favor, hit a DDT for two. Jericho did the 10 punches in the corner, hit a top row Frankensteiner for a near fall. So Jericho exposed one of the top turnbuckles. And Kingston came back with an exploder. They fought out onto the apron. Jericho suplexed Kingston to the floor, a regular suplex. But he just picked him up and dropped him down on the floor. And Eddie sold it great. I'm not sure how much of that was selling because it looked like it sucked to take that move. I certainly would not have wanted to take that move. And, you know, I'm not in the ring like Eddie is, but he was selling the hell out of that. Back inside, Jericho avoided a spinning back fist and hit some suplexes, the last of which saw Kingston land right on top of his head. Actually, when they showed the replay, it was more the side of his neck. And I mean, these guys were beating the fuck out of each other. They were dropping each other on their heads like it was like, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of a Naito Ibushi match in New Japan. Because every time those two guys get in the ring together, I fear for their lives. Especially Ibushi. I always fear for Ibushi when I see him in the ring, the way he lands on his neck all the time. But those guys love dropping each other on their heads with suplexes. That's what these two were doing here in this match. So Jericho went for a lion salt. Eddie had to scoot over into position so Jericho could hit the move. Jericho got him in the walls of Jericho. Kingston fought to the ropes. Jericho thought that he got the match won. He got up in Aubrey Edwards' face. She shoved him back. That gave Eddie enough time to come back and connect with the spinning back fist. Great near fall. And Jericho came back with a code breaker. He had a couple of them, actually, for some near falls. And then he looked, and the camera zoomed in on Jericho. And he's saying to Eddie, "You can't win the big one." And in comes Jericho, trying for the Judas effect. Eddie avoids it, hits him with the spinning back fist, follows up with the second one. And Kingston put Jericho in his stretch plum submission. And eventually Jericho had no choice but to tap out. And Eddie Kingston picks up the win. Now, after the match, Eddie offered his hand to Jericho because Jericho said, "If you beat me, I'll shake your hand and pay you the respect that you deserve." And so Eddie put his hand out. Jericho teased accepting it, but pulled his hand back and walked away. So the SOB went back on his word. This was a great opener. This was way more physical, I think, than anybody would have expected coming into this match. And I would say that this match here against Kingston, one of Jericho's best matches since coming to AEW, since the beginning of AEW, of all the matches that Chris Jericho has had, especially singles matches, I would put this in his top three. And you know, by proxy, it would also be one of Eddie Kingston's best matches as well. And he's had some great ones. He's been in there with Punk. He's been in there with Danielson. And the Punk match, I love that too. But for Jericho, this was one of his top matches, I think, of his AEW career. And it was a win that Eddie Kingston really needed. So a hot start to this show. We had Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus defending the AEW tag team titles. Three-way match against the Young Bucks and against Red Dragon. The rules were two men in the ring at any given moment. Let me just welcome everybody who is filing on in here for the Revolution review here on a very late night, early Monday morning. Welcome, welcome. Please don't forget to hit that like button and that sub button if you are not already subscribed. So the story early on in the tag team title match was Red Dragon and the Young Bucks working together. Of course, that did not last very long. You knew that wasn't going to last very long at all. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus worked together at one point. They hit an Escalera doomsday device for a very near fall. Nick Jackson started a run of offense of his own. He got cut off by Luchasaurus, who hit a chokeslam. Kyle O'Reilly, he got the dinosaur and a guillotine. Jungle Boy broke that up with a shooting star press. He just climbs up top and hits a shooting. That's one way to break up a move, I suppose. Nick Jackson then broke up the pinfall attempt with a 450 splash. Matt Jackson grabbed one of the title belts, but Kyle used the distraction to hit Jungle Boy with it for a near fall. Red Dragon hit the high-low, and Luchasaurus broke up that pin attempt. The Bucks hit super kicks on Bobby Fish, Jungle Boy, and Kyle O'Reilly before Nick landed a step-up dive onto Luchasaurus on the floor. The BTE trigger followed that. Kyle O'Reilly broke up the pin. So the Young Bucks tried for more bang for your buck. Jungle Boy caught one of them with a Super Rana and then immediately transitioned into a German suplex on the other. Words do not do it justice. Really, Jungle Boy was the star of this match. Jungle Boy was absolutely, of all six men in this match, Jungle Boy was the star of this match. And that, when I look back on this pay-per-view, as I sit here thinking about this now, Jungle Boy in this match and Wardlow in the ladder match and then again later on in the show and then the main event, Hangman Page. What do you notice? What is a common thread throughout this show? For all of the Bryan Danielsons and the Stings and the CM Punks and the Jerichos and all of these big names and these Hall of Fame caliber names and these former WWE names that they have under contract working in this company, some of them in very prominent positions, what you're seeing are the younger guys, the lesser known guys, the homegrown guys and girls. They're the ones who are really getting over here. They're the ones who are shining on the show. You can throw Darby Allin on that list, Sammy Guevara. That's what you want to see. It can't just be about the big names. You've got to also be getting over the younger talent, the homegrown AEW talent, so that one day they'll be the ones at the top of the card, and you see it all throughout the show. Jungle Boy, highlighted this match. Wardlow, one of the biggest stars on the entire show. Hangman Page, victorious in the main event, retains his championship over Adam Cole. This was a common theme throughout the show. That's what you want to see. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, they end up hitting the Thoracic Express for the win. It's impossible to keep up with everything that happens, especially in a Young Bucks match. But it's impossible to keep up with everything that was going on here in this match. Just know that it was an excellent match. The right team went over. Figured coming into this, Young Bucks, Red Dragon, they have their own story. Tension, right, bubbling up beneath the surface. They were going to cancel each other out. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus have been tag team champions for 2 months. 2 months. Way too soon to take the belts off them. So it was the right outcome here. The right team won. And at this point in the show, I'm looking at the last three matches. I'm looking at that six-man tag at the end of the buy-in. I'm looking at Jericho and Kingston. And I'm looking at this match and I'm saying, this might be the greatest stretch of three straight matches that I can remember seeing on a pay-per-view. And we had the ladder match coming up next. The Face of the Revolution ladder match was coming up right after this, with the winner earning a TNT championship match in 2 weeks on Dynamite. They're going to be at the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio. Keith Lee, Wardlow, Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricky Starks, Orange Cassidy, and Christian Cage. And as they have in the past, they have the giant Sonic the Hedgehog ring hanging above. Dan Lambert, they showed him in the crowd. He was watching with Scorpio Sky. He's going to wrestle Sammy Guevara for the TNT title on Wednesday. Ethan Page was there as well. And Paige Van Zandt, who apparently is All Elite. I don't know when she's going to be starting, but she was up there as well. I will say, they kept cutting to them throughout the show. So they were sitting up there the entire night, up in the skybox or upper deck, wherever they were, watching the show. The last time they showed them on camera, I don't remember if it was during the main event or right before the main event, because it was such a long fucking show. Go back and look. That last shot of Lambert and his people, when they showed Paige Van Zandt, she looked exhausted. She looked like, I don't know if she was bored or if she was just so tired she was ready to pass out. She had that look in her eyes like she was just ready to lay down and go to sleep. And I can understand that feeling. Yeah, not that the show was bad, but it's just fucking long. So Christian, who has had a little bit of experience in these ladder matches in his day, I think they said, what did they say on commentary? This was his 21st, I think, or 22nd ladder match, I believe. He hit a reverse DDT early on off the ladder to Will Hobbs. Keith Lee caught Orange Cassidy doing a dive off the top rope. He caught him, and he used him as a weapon. He was flinging his body around to, you know, knock down the other competitors in the match. Keith Lee started climbing the ladder, and Wardlow stopped him, very calmly stopped him, and basically was like, come on down. Let's go face to face. And Lee obliged, and he started climbing down the ladder. After he did, though, Hobbs grabbed the ladder, and he knocked them both out of the ring with it. And then we had the two members of Team Taz, Hobbs and Starks, both racing up each side of one ladder until Orange Cassidy knocked them off. There was a very cool spot, very very innovative. I have not seen a spot like this in a ladder match before, and it's hard. I mean, think of how many ladder matches that we have seen over the years in WWE and AEW and Impact, everywhere, Impact, Ring of Honor, independent shows. And it's hard to come up with stuff that hasn't been done before, right? I mean, it's hard. It's not an easy thing anymore because everything's been done. I don't remember ever seeing this particular spot. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but I've never seen it before where Cassidy had the ladder around his neck. And he was using it, you know, he's spinning around, and I've seen that before. So he's spinning around, and he's trying to hit people with it. And Keith Lee is on one side, Wardlow is on the other, and they stop him, and they zoom in on Cassidy's face, and he has this, like, oh shit look on his face. And the big guys grab either side of the ladder. And Cassidy is trying to figure out what his next move is going to be. And so what he does, and this takes some core strength, he grabs the ladder, and it's like skinning the cat, and flips himself over on top of the ladder. Now, it is a little ridiculous because the other two guys have to hold the ladder for him to do the spot, but as they're holding the ladder, he flips himself onto it and is standing on the ladder, and now he's reaching up, and he's going to try to grab the ring. But then he slips, and he crotched himself on some of the rungs of the ladder. But it looked great. It was a very cool spot. A little while later, the fans were chanting Wardlow's name, Goldberg style, as he climbed the ladder. And he had Orange Cassidy on his back. I think he had a couple of people on his. He might have had Ricky Starks on his back, too. Hobbs was climbing on the other side. Keith Lee brought another ladder over. He set that thing up. He started climbing that ladder. And before long, everybody in the match was on both of these ladders. They were fighting it out. Eventually, everybody got knocked down. There was a very scary spot in this match. Now, you saw what Keith Lee did in his debut a few weeks ago with Isaiah Cassidy, where he flung him from one end of the ring to the other, and it looked spectacular. He basically did something very similar with Orange Cassidy, only this time he threw him out of the ring. He was supposed to throw him out of the ring, and the guys outside were supposed to catch him. Well, they caught part of him, but Lee chucked him out of the ring and threw him so hard, so far, that most of Cassidy, his head, it looked like he landed right on the lower part of the ramp. So he was okay, but that was quite scary. Keith Lee is a very strong man. So, yeah, Orange Cassidy, that was not a very good landing. So we had Hobbs and Lee. They were fighting over by the announce table. All the big guys at one point. You had Hobbs, you had Lee, and you had Wardlow. They brawled up the ramp. And there was a ladder on the stage. And so you had Keith Lee, and you had... it was a Wardlow. I think it was Wardlow and Hobbs. They were struggling for the ladder, and they ended up ripping it in half. And so Hobbs took part of the ladder, and he struck Wardlow from behind with it. They end up brawling over by the announce table, which is over in a different part of the stage. And they left the announcers alone. If this were WWE, the table would have been instantly shattered. But they brawled over by the announcers. And Hobbs and Keith Lee are brawling. They're duking it out. I don't know where Wardlow went. All of a sudden, Wardlow comes from out of nowhere. And he collides with these two men. And he tackles them and knocks them off the stage. And it looked like there's a table down below. And it looked like Will Hobbs hit the table first. Because the table broke before Keith Lee landed on the table. So Hobbs looked like he had a much safer landing than Keith Lee did. Lee just landed on the floor. But Wardlow took them both out of the match. He went down to the ring. Ricky Starks hit Christian with a low blow. Starks was climbing the ladder. Wardlow got in. Danhausen made an appearance, and he put a Danhausen curse. I can't do it, but he put that fucking curse on Ricky Starks, which somehow pulled him down off the ladder. Christian climbed the ladder. Wardlow cut him off with a powerbomb. And Wardlow did a vertical leap. There was a ladder bridge. And he did a vertical leap onto the ladder. Ricky Starks was up there. He's like, oh, shit. And he grabs Starks, and he's going to powerbomb him on the ladder bridge. Now, Starks got his hands behind his head because he knew what was coming. But it still looked like a nasty bump. And he's probably fine. But, you know, again, this is a guy who missed time with a broken neck many months ago. But thankfully, he got his hands behind his head because it looked nasty. I mean, the ladder didn't break, but he folded this guy up right on the back of his head. And Wardlow climbed the ladder. He unhooked the brass ring. And Wardlow is the face of the Revolution. Wardlow has earned himself a TNT championship match. This was the car crash match of the night. I mean, you knew it was going to be coming into it. These ladder matches generally, when you have a multi-man ladder match, six, seven, eight people, I mean, it's like a demolition derby. I mean, that's basically what it is. Not to be mistaken with Demolition Darby. He was coming up a little later on in the show. So there were some innovative spots here. There were also some ugly ones. My only real critique, I thought this match went a few minutes longer than it had to. I think you could have shaved a few minutes off this match. It got to that point where it was like, all right, we should wrap this thing up. That would be my only critique. Otherwise, I thought it was very good. And again, Wardlow will challenge for the title in 2 weeks. Tony Schiavone was on. This was funny. So Tony Schiavone is on stage. And he's got a contract in his hand. This is what we were told was a contract signing segment here. And he's standing there, and it's for the newest addition to the AEW roster. The problem is, Tony, unknowingly, is waving his hand around. He's got this contract in his hand, and so we can see very visibly on the contract, in big lettering, it says, Swerve. So unless Vince Russo was about to walk out, in which case I would have turned the pay-per-view off, unless Russo was coming out, we all knew about 30 seconds before he introduced him who was about to come out. So that was a little bit of an oops. But yes, it was Shane Swerve Strickland. There have been rumors for weeks that he was going to be coming in. He was going to be starting in early March. So this was not really much of a surprise. It is a good signing, though. You know, Swerve's got a lot of talent. He got a raw deal when he got called up to the main roster in WWE. When Hit Row became a thing in NXT, I was very happy for him because for the longest time, he was very directionless in NXT. He was a very good wrestler, but he had no direction. He had there was nothing about him. There was nothing that he was doing at the time other than just sort of existing on the roster. When the Hit Row thing started, he was showing more of his personality, and we got to see, you know, him leading his own group. He won the North American title, and things started really firing for him on all cylinders until he got called up to the main roster, and then, of course, Hit Row became Shit Row, and that was the end of that. So it had nothing to do with him. It wasn't his fault. There were rumors that, you know, Top Dollar was rubbing people the wrong way. You know, the guy got a raw deal. So I'm happy to see him land in AEW, and I hope that he'll, you know, do big things there. He came out, he said, you know, the real is back. He said he could go on and on about the dream matches that he's going to have and the championships he's going to take. He said he had one question. He goes, whose house? And the crowd chanted, Swerve's house. And this went on for a few seconds. So the crowd was into him. You know, the guy could be a star on this roster. So I'm hoping for big things for him in AEW. It's a good signing for them. And now with Ring of Honor, again, we don't know what Tony Khan's plans are as far as running Ring of Honor as maybe a separate entity. Yeah, who knows? Maybe he ends up being more featured as a Ring of Honor star. Maybe that would be a better place for him instead of him possibly getting lost in the shuffle on Dynamite and Rampage. You know, when I was talking about this on the podcast earlier, I was floating some names. I actually mentioned William Regal having some involvement, and maybe he will. But I mentioned a guy like Cesaro. I feel the same way about him. He would be a big free agent signing, you know, as far as a great talent goes. But then I could see him ending up like a Jay Lethal or what Andrade was for so long. Now Andrade is starting to be featured a little more often. I'm not so sure that maybe, you know, Tony Khan running Ring of Honor as a separate entity and then featuring these guys, you know, at or near the top on ROH wouldn't be the best thing for him. And then eventually they could transition over to the AEW, you know, main TV shows. But we'll see. We'll see what they have in store for him. Jade Cargill against Ty Conti for the TBS Championship. This is the first match I think of when I think of what matches could have been cut to shorten this show. This match is number one on that list. They gave Jade the live guitar treatment with Kingfish performing her music live, and she came out dressed up as Jade from the Mortal Kombat game. Conti got up in her face, and this is how the match started. Ty Conti gets up in her face, and Jade grabs her by the head and kisses her, plants a wet one right on her lips. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, hey now, what's going on here? Maybe Bryan Danielson taught her that move. Bryan Danielson apparently has been mentoring her and training with her behind the scenes. Maybe the American Dragon is teaching her some new moves. I don't know. But Jade immediately went for the Jaded. Conti fought out, looked for an armbar. Out on the floor, Anna Jay was outside in Ty Conti's corner. And Jade hit her with a pump kick, and Anna went backwards. She collided ribs first with the timekeeper's table, so she took a bump. A couple minutes later, though, she got her revenge. Anna Jay had a steel chair in her hand. And when the referee wasn't looking, Jade was over by the ropes, and Anna hit her with the chair. Conti rolled her up for a near fall. Came back, hit the DD Ty for another near fall. Jade blocked the Ty KO and hit the Eye of the Storm for two. Went up and hit a frog splash. I haven't seen her do that before. That's a new one. Conti hit a pile driver for two. Climbed the ropes. Jade knocked her forward, though, and Ty. So you got to picture this. So Ty is up on the top rope, right? And she's got her back is turned to her opponent. And she goes face forward, and she knocks her head. At first, I thought it was off the top of the ring post, but then I think it was Excalibur said there's a camera. That might have been one of the corners that there was a camera mounted on top of the post. but her head whacked it. And so Jade grabbed her in position for the Jaded, hit her finish and got the win. I will say this, even though this is a match I would have cut if I was looking for matches to cut off the show, I would have put this on TV or on the pre-show. But this was the best Jade Cargill match of her entire career so far. And kudos to Ty Conti, you know, for pulling it out of her because she did a good job as well. The match had some rough spots, but this was the best match of Jade Cargill's career. And every time I see her, I feel like she gets a little bit better and a little bit better. You know, maybe it's Danielson, maybe it's just her getting more reps, whatever it is. This was the best match I've seen her have so far. And so she remains undefeated, but I didn't think this had to be on the pay-per-view. So, what is going on? Oh, I see Dylan. Dylan just dropped the super chat. Again, I'm going to be getting to your super chats a little bit later. We're just shy of 2,000 packed in here live at almost 1 o'clock in the morning. What is going on, guys? We're about the midway point here. We're working our way through. We're working now up to what I thought was the best match on the show, which was CM Punk. One-on-one in a dog collar match against MJF. This was, outside of the Regal cameo later in the show, this was my favorite moment of the night. They played CM Punk's music first, and then it switched over to MJF's music, which got, of course, great heel heat because the guy's a dick. So MJF makes his entrance first. And now we're waiting, and we're waiting for Punk, and I hear this music playing, and at first I can't really make out what it is, because it's kind of low. And then about, I don't know, 10 seconds into it, it hits me. I realize what I'm listening to. And I had the biggest smile on my face. So they played CM Punk's old Ring of Honor theme music, I guess in celebration of Tony Khan buying Ring of Honor. Although this might have happened anyway. I mean, it's kind of part of the story here between these two. But Miseria Cantare by AFI. They played the fucking AFI song here on this show. And I love this song. It's just, it's got this epic feel to it. I always liked this song. So they played Miseria Cantare, and out comes CM Punk in his old Ring of Honor gear. He's got the basketball shorts. He's got the windbreaker. He's got the, you know, the triple X on the back, and he's got the triple X up and down the sides of his shorts. I have been waiting a very long time to hear this music again, preferably in Chicago. You know, Chicago, New York, Philly. Yeah, I figured it would get a better reaction probably in one of those cities, you know, which is where he used to, you know, wrestle. Instead, we got it in Orlando. And you could tell there were a lot of people in the crowd who didn't know that this was his Ring of Honor music because it didn't get a very big reaction. I mean, you could see certain people singing along to it in the crowd. Some people knew. But there were a lot of people who didn't get it. But if you know, you know. And this put a smile on. I'm sure it was just a one-off, but this put a smile on my face. Justin Roberts introduced Punk as the Second City Saint during his ring intro. This was a long match, slow and methodical, but violent and bloody. Exactly the way that it had to be, exactly the way that I was expecting it to go down, and I thought it told a great story. This match was, I can't even really say it was the culmination or the payoff, because I don't think we've seen the last of these two in the ring together, but I'll wait until I get to the end here, and I'll tell you where I think this might be going. Because even though I don't think we've seen the last of these two in the ring, I don't know that we're going to get that third match for a while. And I'll tell you why and when. MJF countered a running bulldog from Punk, and he was laying in chain-wrapped right. Again, they had the dog collar around the neck, bound by the chain, and he's laying in some chain-assisted right hands, which opened up the wound on Punk's head. If you remember on Dynamite on Wednesday, Punk got opened up badly. He was bleeding all over the place. So here we go again, bleeding all over the place. MJF had himself a Scott Steiner moment from Survivor Series 2002. When he went outside the ring, he demanded a microphone. He said, "Give me the fucking mic." And they gave him the fucking mic. and he took it into the ring and he told Punk he wanted him to tell these people that he quits, just like he quit on him all those years ago. And he put the microphone in front of his face and Punk told him to eat shit, Max. MJF was about to say something else. Punk yanked him down, though, and hit a diving headbutt to the groin. Punk hit his corner knee in the running bulldog combo that he does in a lot of his matches. He whipped MJF with the chain. MJF dug his nails into Punk's forehead, locked on the chain-assisted sleeper. Very similar to the way that he beat Punk in Chicago when he had the wrist tape and he wrapped it around Punk's neck and choked him out. Punk jackknifed over for a cradle that forced MJF to break the hold. MJF blocked the GTS, applied the salt of the earth armbar, but Punk countered into the Anaconda Vice. MJF fought back. He went for the heat seeker. Punk stopped it, and he wrapped the chain around his knee. He struck MJF with a shining wizard. That sent him out to the floor. So Punk went to work on him outside for a while. The 10 punches sent him into the steel steps. Back in the ring, Punk called for the GTS, but when he went for it, his knee buckled under him. And MJF tried for a tombstone pile driver. This was a recurring theme on this show. Now, The Undertaker is also celebrating a birthday in a few weeks. I think his birthday is, I want to say March 24th, I believe, is The Undertaker's birthday. And he's probably going to be 56, maybe 57, something like that this year. Maybe this was the AEW roster's birthday gift to The Undertaker, that they were going to abuse his finishing move and kick out of it. Nobody won with it. But there were at least five or six different tombstone pile drivers on this show tonight, or tombstone attempts in these matches. Maybe this is their way of paying homage to him because he's going into the Hall of Fame. But if you wanted to take a man's finishing move and bury it, and just bury it 6 feet under, the AEW roster did a good job of it here tonight. Even Jim Ross couldn't help himself. And in the main event, he made a comment about it. You could tell, though, when he made that comment, yeah, he was thinking, why are you doing this? What are these guys thinking? They're killing the move. So MJF tried for a tombstone on the apron. Punk fell backwards, though. He reversed out of it into a tombstone of his own. I always loved that spot. I always have loved that spot. Undertaker and Steve Austin did that spot in their match at Cold Day in Hell pay-per-view in 97. And I still think that's the best version of that spot that I've ever seen. Punk climbed the ropes. He wrapped the chain around his elbow, but MJF avoided the elbow drop. And MJF rolled out to the floor. He grabbed a small sack and he emptied it out in the ring. And of course, it was full of thumbtacks. So now we have thumbtacks strewn all over the mat, right in the middle of the ring. He hit Punk's rising knee strike. Punk countered the bulldog by biting MJF's hand. MJF tried to knock Punk backwards onto the tacks. Punk avoided it. At that moment, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, he came out to the Ring of Honor theme music. He's wearing the basketball shorts, right? He's introduced in this match as the Second City Saint. Looking at the thumbtacks, I'm going, this fucker is going to go for a Pepsi plunge off the top rope. Isn't he? Onto the tacks. I was fully expecting a Pepsi plunge onto the tacks. Well, he tried for it. He did try for it, but it didn't work. Instead, MJF hit a superplex. Punk mostly missed the tacks. I mean, if anything, his ass got the tacks. But they fell a little bit short. I don't think they got quite what they were going for there. The chain became unhooked from MJF's collar. And so while the referee tried fixing it, MJF all of a sudden starts calling for Wardlow. He wants Wardlow to come down to the ring. So here comes Wardlow, and Wardlow just had this ladder match. I don't even know if it was an hour ago up to this point. MJF had this ladder match, and here he is. He's back in a suit. And he's strolling on down to the ring. And he gets down to the ring and MJF demands the Dynamite Diamond ring. And Wardlow starts checking his pockets. And he's like, oh, you can see the look on his face. Like, wait, I thought the thing was in my pocket here. He can't find the ring. He would make a terrible, what do they call the best man. He would make a terrible best man at MJF's wedding here. I can't find the fucking ring. And MJF is getting very impatient in the ring. And Punk uses this as a distraction. He used the distraction as a way to hit MJF with the GTS. And MJF took this comical bump down onto the thumbtacks, and he starts shaking from the pain. Oh, he's shaking. It's what I call the Devon Dudley sell. Or Vince McMahon selling the Stone Cold Stunner for the first time. Flopping around like a fish. Wardlow, all of a sudden, now that MJF has suffered this very painful fate, all of a sudden they zoom in on Wardlow's face. And he has this epiphany, like, oh, wait, I think I have found it. And he reaches into his right jacket pocket, and he finds the diamond ring. The sarcastic expressions on his face here were perfect. He played this perfectly. And the crowd was cheering for him. They were eating this shit up, because they knew what was happening here. And he calmly sits the ring, because he's made eye contact with CM Punk, but he calmly sits the ring down on the mat. He turns around and he walks to the back, and he gets a big reaction, big ovation from the crowd. I mean, he all but handed the ring to CM Punk and told MJF in so many words to go fuck off, because he doesn't need MJF anymore. He's got a TNT title match in his back pocket. He won the ladder match. What does he need him for? I'm sure they'll still be together on TV on Wednesday. MJF will not be very happy with him. And Wardlow will play it off like, oh, I didn't know. It was in my other pocket. I didn't know. So I still think there'll be some kind of a segment on TV that, you know, that's sort of the official split. But that's basically what this was. And it was played perfectly. And Punk put the ring on his finger. MJF was on his knees. And, you know, he looked up and he spat in CM Punk's face. And Punk walloped him with the ring. He clobbered him. It's clobbering time. He clobbered him with the ring to score the 1-2-3. These two men, they tore each other to shreds. They bled buckets. They landed on thumbtacks. But the biggest pop was for Wardlow putting the diamond ring down on the mat and walking out. That's how over he is right now. This is a guy in Wardlow who nobody knew who he was. I didn't even know where the guy came from. I had never heard his name mentioned before. When I heard that he was signed to AEW, I said, Wardlow? What the fuck is Wardlow? I had never seen him work. I didn't know what he sounded like. I didn't even know what he looked like. So they took this guy from scratch and they built him up and they've taken their time with him over the past 3 years, 2.5 years, however long it's been, to get to this point. Everything has been building to this point. They have booked this guy perfectly. They could not have done a better job of kind of nurturing this guy to the point that he is at now. And it all paid off tonight. You heard that reaction from the crowd. You've heard the crowds for weeks now. They've been waiting. They've been dying to see this guy punch this fucker in the face. He didn't do that tonight, but they still reacted in a big way. They've made a new star. They have created a new star out of nothing. The idea that I floated on the podcast was that Punk wins this match. I thought Punk was going to win. So the idea that I had floated is that Punk wins this match and goes on to challenge for the AEW World Championship at Double or Nothing. Punk could be next in line for a shot at the AEW World title. And he could win the AEW World title. And MJF could be the guy who eventually goes on to beat CM Punk and take the championship from Punk. And maybe that match doesn't happen for a while. Maybe that match doesn't happen for 6 months or 9 months or a year. Maybe we're having this conversation at Revolution 2023, whenever it is. Because these guys now are one win apiece. MJF beat Punk in Chicago. Punk beat MJF tonight. So whenever they get in the ring again the next time, it's going to be the rubber match. MJF can still win this feud. And wouldn't it be poetic if when that happens and he beats Punk, when that happens, he becomes the AEW World Champion. He beats Punk to become the champion. It could happen. It's just an idea. I just put that out there as a possible idea. But this was an excellent match. I thought this was the best match on the entire show. The story it told, the brutality, the blood and everything. I mean, you know, they tend to go overboard sometimes with the blood, but this was the match that needed it. This was the match that you knew was going to have it. The story called for it. And it's also just another in a growing list of great matches for MJF in his young career. He's racking up quite a resume of great matches. And tonight was just another example. We had Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, defending the AEW Women's Championship against Thunder Rosa. We have a brand new AEW Women's Championship. I didn't say champion. Championship, there it is on your screen. For those who didn't get a good view, or maybe you didn't see the pay-per-view tonight, that is the new title. They have redesigned the AEW Women's Championship. It is bigger than the old one, and it is a massive improvement over the old one. You know, actually, now that I'm looking at it, it looks very similar to the men's title. It looks very similar to the AEW World Championship, only this one's not quite as big as that one. But I like the world title, and so it's not surprising that I like this title. I like this design, so... definitely an improvement over what they had before. You know, the problem is the TBS title looked nicer than their old World Women's Championship. So it was definitely due for an upgrade. But I said coming into this show, I said this in my predictions, and I've been saying it for a couple of weeks at least on the podcast. This is the match that they should have been building to now for quite some time. So we knew that at some point we were going to get a rematch between these two. After the lights out match they had a year ago, it was inevitable that these two eventually were going to meet again. And as we got closer here to the pay-per-view, even though I've been calling for this match for months now, I said it doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel like the right time for this match. To have Thunder Rosa, not for the match, but to have Thunder Rosa win the championship. I wouldn't do it. I would not have done the title change tonight. I would have Britt Baker retain, and I would give it a little more time. I would give it maybe even a couple of more months and do it in Vegas at Double or Nothing. But whenever you do it, have Britt retain. And that is what they did here on this show. The way they did it, though, it just didn't work. This wasn't very good. Way too much interference. Now, we've seen this in Britt Baker matches before. We've seen Rebel get involved, and we've seen Jamie Hayter get involved. It's how Britt Baker wins the majority of her matches. In this match tonight, it just was so bad. It was to the point of absurdity that these women were interfering and they were causing distractions so often. The fact that at no point during this match, when we have seen other matches where people interfere and get involved for a lot less than what these women were doing here, and they get ejected from ringside, the fact that they were interfering freely at the rate that they were, and neither of them were ejected or anything like that, was completely fucking absurd. So I get, you know, she's the heel heat, you have interference. They took this way too far. And I also think that when you do that, this AEW audience is not an audience that is going to be receptive to, you know, a finish like they did on this show. I don't think that's a finish that the AEW audience really likes and that they really want to see. So I just don't think that this worked in the way that they were hoping for it to work. And the crowd also just didn't really seem all that interested in this match. Rosa started a comeback after a long beatdown. Britt countered an iconoclasm into an air raid crash for two. She hit a pendulum suplex for another near fall. Rebel passed Britt the black glove for Lockjaw. And Rosa surprised her with a running drop kick. She followed with a superplex and floated over into a fireman's carry neckbreaker. Baker fought out of a Fire Thunder driver attempt, hit a neckbreaker and an underhook suplex, and Britt then hit an avalanche air raid crash for a near fall. Rosa hit a tombstone. There's that move again. Rosa hit a tombstone. Rebel distracted the official, and Rosa got a visual pin only. Rosa took care of Rebel. Jamie Hayter passed Britt Baker the belt. Baker hit a curb stomp onto the women's title. That was a good near fall. Baker went for the lockjaw. Rosa turned it into lockjaw of her own. And Rosa turned that into a straitjacket sleeper. Rebel distracted the referee. Britt was tapping out, so the referee didn't see it. She starts tapping. Doesn't count. Rosa then speared Rebel through the ropes to the floor. That was a cool spot. Took down Hayter with a lariat on the floor. As soon as Rosa slid back into the ring, Baker hit her with a curb stomp, and she got the win. There were moments of this match that I thought were good. Too inconsistent, though, I think. I mean, this was not the best match of either woman's AEW run. I've seen both women have much better matches than this. It just didn't click. It didn't work. And again, I get that Rebel and Hayter, they're there to interfere. They're there to provide the assist. And when these two meet again, perhaps there'll be a stipulation. Perhaps it'll be a steel cage match to try to keep the two of them out. And they did it this way by design to get to that stipulation. That's very possible. Very possible we'll get a cage match or something like that. Stemming from all the inner, we almost have to. You can't just do this match again without adding some kind of a stipulation. But even still, right? We're not there yet. We haven't seen that match yet. All we have to go by is what we saw tonight. And what we saw tonight wasn't very good. So, you know, we'll see what they end up doing. I mean, this Wednesday on Dynamite, it seems pretty obvious to me. Rosa is wrestling Layla Hirsch. And so it seems pretty obvious to me that Rosa is going to beat Layla Hirsch. The winner of that match is going to get a championship match in 2 weeks at the St. Patrick's Day Slam episode of Dynamite. That just so happens to be in Rosa's hometown of San Antonio, Texas. So I don't think they're waiting until Double or Nothing. It looks like they're holding off on the title change for 2 weeks. And they're going to have Rosa win the belt, possibly in the main event that night. They're going to have Rosa beat Britt Baker in her hometown and win the championship. Whether they make it a cage match or something, we'll see. But it seems pretty obvious that we're going to be getting a title change in a couple of weeks. But I'm glad they didn't do it tonight, though, because tonight it just didn't feel like the right time for it. Then we had the other match outside of the dog collar match. This was the other match I was most looking forward to on the show tonight. Jon Moxley one-on-one with the American Dragon. Bryan Danielson. We got chance of we want violence from this crowd, this bloodthirsty crowd in Orlando. Crowd was very clearly tired by this point. I love this, though. I love this match, even if the crowd didn't necessarily seem overly enthused for parts of it. This was a bloody war between these two, which I expected it to be. It was part of the story. Jon Moxley said, I don't trust somebody unless they bleed with me. I think that was the exact quote. So literally they said somebody is going to bleed in this match. As Bryan Danielson, he told Meltzer, he did an interview on the Observer site, a 2-hour audio interview. And at the beginning of it, he said, look, I don't like to share details of my private conversations with Vince McMahon, because he's a very private guy. But he did share with him when Vince said, why do you want to leave? And he said one of the reasons was to spend more time with his family, schedule-wise. But the other reason is I want to bleed more. I want to bleed. And he says Vince told him, well, that's just something I can't do for you. Well, tonight, he got to bleed. He got exactly what he wanted here on this show. So they were chopping and slapping the hell out of each other to start this thing out. Danielson went for a diving headbutt. Moxley rolled out of the way. Moxley came back with a German and hit a Saito suplex, but then ran into a roundhouse kick. Danielson applied a flying guillotine. Moxley fought out of it. He laid in more kicks, which just fired up Moxley even more. And Moxley backdropped Danielson to the floor. Both guys then avoided topes. They end up standing on the outside. And they just start slugging it out. It's like a hockey fight. They're just throwing shots. They don't look particularly good. They're just throwing, you know, their hands around, throwing right hands at each other. So in here, they get busted open. Moxley rolls into the ring. He is pouring blood. I didn't even see how it happened. It might have been a headbutt or something. I didn't see the exact spot where it happened. But he is just busted open. And Danielson also ends up bleeding, although not as much as Moxley was. Danielson hits a rolling elbow. Moxley comes back with a rebound lariat. They fought up to the top rope. Danielson hit a high angle avalanche back suplex for a near fall. Danielson laid in repeated elbows, locked on a dragon sleeper, and Moxley got to the ropes, so that forced the break. So they're trading blows back and forth and submissions. And there's a lapel lock. Moxley gets to the ropes. Both guys end up locking hands, and they try kicking each other's heads in. Moxley got the advantage. He locked in the bulldog choke. Danielson got out of it and landed a running knee, hit the Busaiku knee for a near fall. And Danielson locked on the triangle sleeper. You know, he puts that sleeper on. He does a double bicep pose. Not going to do it. Well, I guess I just did. But he does the double bicep pose, and he's beaten a few people on TV lately with it. Moxley looked like he was fading, but then he came back to life. And he rolled up Danielson for the surprise pinfall. Now, at first, when he flipped his body over for the roll-up, Moxley hit the ropes. And so I think that's part of the reason why the finish came off a little clunky. Because he wasn't supposed to hit the ropes. He hit the ropes, came off the ropes, and then got the shock pin on Danielson. And Danielson couldn't believe it. He got up in Bryce Remsburg's face and was arguing with him. Danielson and Moxley, they end up brawling after the match. They're fighting again in the ring. And all of a sudden, there's a commotion in the crowd. You could tell somebody's coming out. Now, at first, I will tell you, I at first thought that it was Daniel Garcia and Lee Moriarty, who were two of the young names that Danielson has name-dropped and wrestled in recent weeks and has said that, you know, he and Moxley, we could take these young kids under our wing. I thought it was them coming out to try to calm these two down, and this was going to be the start of a new group. Little did I know, when the camera cut to the entranceway, I look over, and who do I see? I see William Regal, being called by that name, in his suit, and an angry scowl on his face. I mean, when does he not have an angry scowl on his face? And he storms down to the ring, he climbs inside, and he's trying to keep the peace. He's trying to break these two up and calm the situation down a little bit. And he goes over to Moxley. And by the way, Regal got the biggest reaction, I think, of anything on the entire show. The two biggest stars on this show were William Regal and Wardlow. And Regal goes over to Jon Moxley and he smacks him in the face. And then he gets nose to nose. He basically headbutted Moxley. He got some of Moxley's blood on his own forehead. He's right up in his face. He's trying to knock some sense into this guy. The camera shows Danielson. He's loving this. He starts clapping. He's smiling. So then Regal goes over to Danielson. He smacks him in the face. And they said on commentary, you know, these are two guys who were mentored by Regal. I knew that about Danielson. I think everybody knows, you know, Danielson at one point was, you know, mentored or trained by Regal. And so there's a history there between those two. But I didn't even think of the idea that what if they brought Regal in to put him and do something with him and Danielson? That was not a thought that even crossed my mind, and it's such an obvious thing. You know, whether he was going to be a manager for Danielson or whatever. The thought never even occurred to me. When I saw him walking down to the ring, I knew exactly what they were going for. And when he slapped Moxley and he slapped Danielson and he got the two of them to shake hands, this was fantastic. And the idea now that maybe we are in fact going to get an alliance, we're going to get a group, maybe they will take some of these young guys under their wing. This is exactly what I was talking about in the predictions earlier, you know, on the podcast. I said Moxley wins, and I hope they move forward with this idea of doing this like two-man power trip type thing. This you know, uneasy alliance between these two guys who have gained respect for each other. I think it could be a lot of fun. Now you drop William Regal into the equation. Sign me the fuck up. That was awesome. This whole post-match angle, I thought this was just fucking fantastic. So, I loved it. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing where they take this and who else potentially might be added to this group as far as like younger talent goes. Very curious to see where this goes. This next match was the other match outside of the Jade match, where if I had to cut two matches from this show just to tighten things up a little bit, it would have been the Jade match and it would have been this next match. As much fun as this was, this also, you could have cut this one for time. Sting, Darby Allin, and Sammy Guevara against Andrade El Idolo, Matt Hardy, and Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party in a Tornado Trios match. As soon as you hear the word tornado, I mean, I was just like, why even bother taking notes here? This is just, these guys are going to be brawling all over the place. These things are going to be, this thing is going to get way out of hand. It's going to be crazy. Sting and Darby placed a garbage can over Jose's head. Jose, of course, being the assistant for Andrade. I guess Jose's the one who got Chavo's job. Chavo Guerrero now is very upset that Tony Khan won't return his calls or his text messages. He said Tony Khan told him, you know, when he went off to go film stuff for Young Rock and whatever else Chavo was doing when he left a few months ago, he said Tony told him, you'll have a job when you're ready to come back. And apparently Tony is ghosting him now. He is not responding to any of his messages. What does he need him for? He's got Jose. So Jose ended up being taken out here. They put a garbage can over his head. Darby got in the ring. And little Rocket Man Darby did his suicide dive through the ropes right into the garbage can. So Matt Hardy and Sting, they brawled into the crowd. This was Tornado Rules, so again, there are no rules. It's just mass chaos. The Butcher and the Blade showed up. They attacked Sting. Can we take a moment, just a quick moment here for a second? Because I gave praise earlier in the stream to Chris Jericho, who is looking a lot healthier than he has looked in a very long time. He has slimmed down. The Butcher. I didn't notice it because I don't even remember when I saw The Butcher on television last. The last I heard about The Butcher, I know that his band broke up. I think the lead singer of his band is like a nut job or something. And so all the other band members, they couldn't make it work anymore. And so his band is no longer together. So I heard about that and I figured he was probably going to be back on AEW television now more often. But he also, night and day, he slimmed down. I saw a picture online. There was a side-by-side comparison of him before, you know, even the mustache and everything, and then what he looks like now, and it's almost like two different people. So good for him. You know, good for him. He trimmed down also. He looks to be in great shape. So the Butcher and the Blade, they attacked Sting, and the Butcher had Darby Allin at one point, and he is swinging Darby into the barricade. Just back and forth, swinging him into the metal railing. They're out in the crowd. There was a spot on the other side of the arena. While all of this is going on in the crowd, over by the entrance tunnel, I think it was the entrance tunnel, but you know, by the stage and the set, Isaiah Cassidy has climbed up on top of the set piece, or on top of the tunnel entrance. Sammy Guevara looks up and sees him, and he climbs up after him. So now you know somebody is going to die here. Somebody is going to fall to their doom, if not both of them. Then you see the tables down below, and you knew what was coming here. Sammy sets him up for a Spanish fly, and he hits a Spanish fly off the top of the, I keep saying it was, it may not have been the tunnel, but we'll call it the tunnel. He hits a Spanish fly off the top of the tunnel. There were two tables set up. He completely missed one, and they went through the other. So that was the first big crazy spot of this match, but not the last. But that was the first big crazy spot of the match. Butcher and Blade, back in the crowd now, they're stacking up tables like it's fucking ECW when New Jack and everybody would be doing the balcony dives and everything. They're stacking up tables, like 2-3 tables stacked up. And you knew somebody was going to do something crazy. Now, I just assumed that it was going to be Darby Allin, because that's what he does. He's a maniac. That's why I called him Demolition Darby earlier. And Sting is fighting off the Butcher and the Blade. Darby and Andrade, they're fighting now on top of the tables. Sting has his big moment in the sun when he climbs up. Now, this is the balcony, okay? So this is a part of the crowd where there's like an entrance tunnel, and Sting climbs up on the top part of this balcony. And this fucking guy, at 62 years old, right, the Hall of Famer, the legend, the icon, the man who doesn't have to do any of this shit, does a balcony dive onto Andrade down through three tables. And when I watched the replay, it looked like he may have smacked his head on top of the table before, you know, crashing through them. And I hope he's okay. Because when the match was over, he looked woozy, like he was drunk. And I don't know, to me, that didn't look like he was selling. He was almost like out on his feet. So, and again, part of the reason that he was forced into an early retirement in WWE is because of the neck issues and the spinal stenosis or whatever it was. So hopefully he's okay. But holy shit. What is this guy thinking? Steve, what are you doing? A fucking balcony dive from Sting. Not the first dive that we've seen him do in AEW, but probably the craziest and the most dangerous that we have seen from him yet. Sting, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, this guy's out there. He's out there with Darby. He's out there with Sammy. He's out there with Andrade. All these younger guys. They're all younger than him. Even Matt Hardy is younger than him. Doesn't move around like it, but he's younger than Sting. And so he probably just, it reinvigorates him, and it makes him feel like, well, I have to pull my own weight. All these guys are doing all the heavy lifting. We have to have me out here doing something. I know what, I'll do a balcony dive. And I'm just worried, you know, one of these days, he's going to land wrong, and he's going to fucking kill himself. You know, I had a lot of reservations when I found out that Sting was going to come in and actually wrestle in AEW. I thought he could be really useful to the company just as an attraction and in the video game and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I never envisioned him being back in the ring, you know, as much as we've seen him, let alone doing the kind of things that he's been doing. So it was a lot of fun to see. He's out of his fucking mind. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't want to see him end up crippling himself on some stupid move like that. Back in the ring, Darby hit a Scorpion Death Drop on Matt Hardy through chairs, and then followed that up with the coffin drop for the win. Unfortunately, when Darby went for the coffin drop, he fell short. Or Matt Hardy, looked like Matt rolled out of the way. I don't know what Matt was trying to do, but it didn't look good. It didn't look like he connected with him at all, and that was the finish. So after all of this chaos and all of this carnage, they fucked up the finish, and it looked terrible. But Darby pinned him anyway. He got the 1-2-3. So it went exactly the way that I thought, with Matt being the one to take the loss, because now on TV this week, Matt is going to be kicked out of the Hardy family office. I've been saying it. This guy is going to get, he's going to get iced out. There's going to be a hostile takeover by Andrade and or the other members. And Matt is going to get the short end of the stick. And that is where Jeff Hardy makes his debut. And Jeff Hardy reunites with his brother. And we got a Hardy Boys reunion on television. The only question is, you know, when do we see Jeff Hardy? You know, his non-compete is up on Wednesday. And I mentioned this the other night. I didn't know the answer. I still don't know the answer, but I'll ask it anyway. If his non-compete is up on the 9th, can he appear on Dynamite on the 9th, or can he not appear until the 10th? I'm not sure what the answer to that is. That will determine whether or not we see Jeff Hardy on Dynamite this week. But Jeff Hardy, according to Fightful, is going to be at Dynamite this week. He just may not be on camera. It really just boils down to, legally, when can he be on television? Can he be on television Wednesday, or do they have to wait, you know, from Thursday on? I don't know the answer to that, but very clear that Jeff Hardy is coming in very soon. And finally, 84 years later, we have reached the main event. For the AEW World Championship, the Battle of the Adams, Hangman Adam Page against Adam Cole. For the AEW World title, Cole came to the ring dressed like something out of Halo, I guess. Everybody was saying Halo. I was going to say, Transformers or something, but I guess Halo is what he was going for, I assume. Some boos. More than a few boos for Hangman when they did the ring intros, which was very interesting. A lot of Adam Cole fans in Orlando. Well, hey, it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, now that I think about it, of course, it actually makes sense. Adam Cole has spent the last 4 years of his life working out of Orlando. So, yeah, he's got a lot of fans down there in that part of the country. And specifically in that city. So Hangman had the advantage early on until he accidentally clotheslined the ring post. And unfortunately for him, he clotheslined with his right arm, which is what he uses for the Buckshot Lariat. So Cole went to work, threw him into the ring steps. And actually, you know what? I have to say, somebody in the chat made a comment. And I actually have to agree. When Cole came out dressed that way, I have to say, I like Adam Cole. Adam Cole is he's a really nice guy, but as a professional wrestler, he has had some incredible matches. Some of my favorite matches, in fact, in NXT history involved Adam Cole. So he's very good at what he does. But when I saw him walk out in that, again, I think Halo, in the Halo getup, it looked ridiculous. It looked like a kid coming to the ring dressed up in his Halloween costume or something. And yeah, we see this from time to time with wrestlers who come out cosplaying as something or someone. We've seen it in AEW. I mean, the guys came out dressed up as fucking Ghostbusters, but that was a Halloween show, you know. But we've seen the New Day dressed up as ridiculous, like, anime characters or whatever. But for some reason, I'm looking at Cole, who's not the physically the biggest guy in the world, and he's wearing, it's like a suit of armor, and it's like almost bigger than he is, and he's walking down to the ring. I'm like, he looked ridiculous. I actually agree. I thought he looked pretty fucking ridiculous. But anyway, I want to pick on Adam Cole. Cole went on offense for a bit, and Page came back. He hit an apron power bomb. He followed that up with the Orihara moonsault. He set up for a buckshot lariat, but Cole rolled out to the floor to avoid it. And when Page walked over, Cole caught him with a shot to the head. Back in the ring, he came charging in at Page, but Cole caught him with a Liger bomb for two. And on commentary, Jim Ross, he asked Excalibur straight out, like, Jim Ross didn't give a fuck on this show. I mean, Jim Ross is at the stage of his life and his career where he basically doesn't give a fuck. And so Excalibur's like, oh, Liger bomb. And Jim Ross is like, what is the difference between a Liger bomb and a power bomb? I don't think he was asking it as a legitimate question. Like, he genuinely wanted to know. I think he was just, you know, probably just tired of Excalibur shit. But Excalibur explained to him, well, you see, with the Liger bomb, you got to get the legs over the shoulders or something. And I'm just like, I don't know. He came up like a dick asking that question. Page hit a top rope moonsault, but Cole caught him coming off the ropes with a super kick to the face. Love that spot. I remember when I saw Adam Cole do that to Ricochet in NXT, I jumped up out of my seat. Like, the first time I saw that spot, and they slowed it down, and they showed the replay of it on that NXT show. And I mean, it just connected flush right with the side of Ricochet's. Like, you could have not have timed it any better. And Cole did the same thing here. It looked just as good here with Hangman coming off the ropes. Cole went for their super kick. He tuned up the band first, and he went for the super kick, but Page avoided it, picked him up, and dropped him on his head with the dead eye for a near fall. Page came in for a big lariat, but Cole took him down with a cross face, and Hangman got out of that, hit a tombstone pile driver for a near fall. I said we had a lot of these on the show. Page hit a deadlift German, but Cole came back with an ushigoroshi right across the knee. Hangman hit an avalanche. Well, it's more of a Spanish fly, I guess, right? I was going to say fallaway slam, but it wasn't really a fallaway slam because Hangman flipped over with him in the midair. So it was like an avalanche Spanish fly to Adam Cole. Set up for the buckshot lariat, and here come Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly. Here comes Red Dragon down to the ring. Cole hit a Panama Sunrise from the apron to the floor. Took out Hangman. This is where the near falls. I mean, it was a problem in other matches, too. It's just a problem in general these days. But this is something that I have noticed about Adam Cole matches, main event matches with Adam Cole in particular. And I say that as somebody who thinks his New York, his TakeOver New York match with Johnny Gargano, I believe, best NXT match in history. But there are... There tends to be a point in these Adam Cole big matches where one near fall too many. They go to that well one too many times. This was the point in this match where I felt like, one too many near falls. But I knew coming in, I mean, it's just there's a certain blueprint that he has in these big matches. So I knew it was coming. I'm not surprised by this. I'm just saying that was the point where I felt like, That's one near fall too far, I think. But he tried for a second Panama Sunrise in the ring this time. Hangman countered out of it. Red Dragon distracted the referee. Cole kicked Hangman low, and he connected with the Panama Sunrise. Lowered the boom right to the back of the head. There's great tease here that we were going to have a new champion, but Hangman kicked out. There was a buckshot lariat attempt into a super kick. Cole went for the boom, and Hangman just collapsed. He just fell down to avoid the move. And Hangman hit the dead eye a couple of minutes later. Dead eye off the apron through a table. All of a sudden, there were tables there. Or a table. And he hits the dead eye through the table. The Dark Order run down to the ring, and they're checking on their boy Hangman, and they end up brawling with Red Dragon. Inside the ring, Hangman finally hit the buckshot lariat, but Adam Cole got his fingers on the bottom rope at the very last minute. So, keeping hope alive, Hangman took off his leather belt. He tied Adam Cole's left wrist to the top rope, much the same way that Cole and Fish and O'Reilly tied Hangman to the ropes on TV on Wednesday. And when Page hit the ropes and he came off, Cole caught him with a kick to the face, and then he freed himself. Hangman pulled down his knee pad, and the crowd booed. There were loud boos from the crowd when Hangman pulled his knee pad down. He hit the ropes, and he hit Adam Cole with his own finishing move. He lowered the boom and then hit a second buckshot lariat to win the match and to retain the AEW World Championship. After the match, Hangman knelt down beside Cole. He picked up Cole's hand, and he shook his hand. See, adhering to the code of honor is Hangman Page as he celebrated his win. I thought that it was a very good main event. I've stated my minor critiques to it, but I thought it was a very good match. Very good match, and the right outcome, not the right time to take that championship off of Hangman Page. And it goes back to what Don Callis said on the buy-in pre-show when he made that little comment that Adam Cole, you're going to make a great transitional champion until Kenny Omega comes back. Again, this is all part of a larger story that once Omega comes back, probably in a month or two, you know, everything's going to bubble up to the surface and we're going to get the Undisputed Era, whatever they call themselves, and the Elite. They're going to be on a collision course, and that should be a lot of fun to see. But, hey, a perfect 12-0 on this pay-per-view. I guess that means it was a very predictable show. But no, I thought it was an excellent show from top to bottom. It was not a perfect show, but it was an excellent night of wrestling. And again, my favorite personally was the dog collar match, but don't sleep on that six-man tag on that buy-in pre-show, because that probably was, that was the other match where I think I really had the most fun watching it, was the House of Black match against Death Triangle and Eric Redbeard. I never would have imagined that that would have ended up being my favorite match or one of my favorites of the night, but there you go. There you go. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll results. Well, we've got almost 2,000 votes in. 88.4% thumbs up, about 7% thumbs in the middle, and 4% thumbs down. So an overwhelmingly positive score for this pay-per-view. People seem to enjoy it. You know, there's something about Revolution. Revolution is usually a pretty damn good show. Was Revolution the show last year, though, with the exploding barbed wire death match? I think it was, wasn't it? I think it was. I think it was the exploding barbed wire death match last year. Well, that didn't end too well. But I remember from a couple of years ago, that incredible tag team match. Tag team title match. It was actually Hangman and Omega against the Young Bucks. That I believe that was the greatest match in AEW up until I saw the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros at All Out in September last year. So, good shit, man. Good shit. Yeah, the Sparklers. Everybody remembers the Sparklers from the exploding barbed wire death match. Well, you know, what are you going to do? Sometimes shit happens, right? Shit happens and life goes on. Let's take a look at your super chats here. I do thank everybody who has sent one in here. We're going to run through all of them. I don't care how long it takes. It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning, but we're going to read your super chats. If you have comments about this show tonight, questions for me, get them on in. Del Fuego. I think Del Fuego was at the show live. He says his voice is gone. That's funny. So is mine. This is my second podcast of the day. But it looked like a fun time, so I hope you had fun. We have Scott Hall. Look at this. Scott Hall dropping 99 cents. Hey, Chico. I heard Scott Hall broke his hip. He's in the hospital. I hope he's doing well. You know, the older you get, when you're in your 60s, and I think he's 63, you break a hip. I mean, that's a pretty serious injury, so. No bullshit. Hopefully he's okay. French Fry Slut. $5 Super Chat. Super jealous of Ty for getting to kiss Mommy Jade. Other than that, and the Baker versus Rosa match, it was a banger of a show. Dry chicken without flavor. Sting may be old, but he's got balls of steel for that table spot. That he does. Dry chicken without flavor again. AEW Revolution brought, or AEW Revolution tonight was fun. The road to Double or Nothing starts now. Yeah, WrestleMania has got a tall order, I think, topping this show tonight. I don't know, man. The dog collar match, the Bryan Danielson, Jon Moxley match, the Hangman Page main event. How is that going to stack up to, you know, Johnny Knoxville? Logan Paul and Pat McAfee, and that I think that'll be entertaining, but I don't know. I look at that WrestleMania card, it's just, I don't know, man. I don't know. Mr. Notorious Dez, you ever watch a wrestling show that delivered on paper, but the crowd just ruined it with no reaction to anything? I wouldn't say no reaction to anything. I mean, there were some matches, they were definitely quiet. Yeah, they were quite noticeably quiet during parts of the Danielson match, the women's title match. There was another one where it was noticeable. So, yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't the hottest crowd that they had performed in front of, but how much of that was just the fact that the show was very long? You know? Clapstick 77. $9.99 super chat. Thank you, Clapstick. Love the show, but too much blood. It was good in the build-up to the Punk MJF match, but not needed in two matches tonight. Alex Jimenez, I was at the show tonight. Great crowd. Well, there you go. That's very different than what we were just talking about. He said the crowd was great. We have a difference of opinion here. Anderson Blitz, Undertaker, look how they massacred my tombstones. Poor guy. James Cooper, awesome show. Wrestling feels fun again. Marcus Robinson Johnson, what's going on, Marcus? Jade Cargill dressed up as Jade from Mortal Kombat equals perfection. Also, Sting is one crazy-ass old man. Elijah with the 1999 Super Chat. Love the show, man. Keep up the great work. I knew you would love that Punk entrance. I remember when he came back, you saying that you really love his Ring of Honor theme and wanted him to use it. I popped big for it. Yeah, and I understand why he used Cult of Personality for his return. You know, that was going to get the biggest reaction at the United Center, but I was holding out hope that at some point he would use this music again, and I was very happy to, if only for one night, I was very happy to see him use it tonight. Tomas, I have returned. Acknowledge me for $5. You are acknowledged. Thank you for the $5. Daryl Harris, do you think Mania will be a better show and why? Right now, no. No. But we don't know the full card yet. But as it stands, it doesn't look like the better of the two shows. Ben Cathery, so hyped for William Effin Regal. Yeah, that's a head-scratching cut by WWE. And look, different setting, it breathes new life into you. And we're going to get to see Regal. It looks like we're going to get to see Regal in a different role than he's been used in for a while. I do think Regal should and could also be of great service to AEW and Tony Khan behind the scenes. The idea that I proposed on the podcast with this whole Ring of Honor thing is maybe you want to have Regal involved in Ring of Honor. I didn't know they had ideas for him to be part of this angle. I would much rather him do this. But he could be useful in so many ways. I mean, just the wealth of knowledge and experience and the respect that this guy has. You know, we could talk about Shane Strickland and Keith Lee and all these talent pickups. But to me, I look at a pickup like William Regal, and I think he could be as valuable as any of them, if not more. Alvin Johnson. The Canadian Destroyer just needs to be renamed the F.U. Petey Williams at this point. Jason Case. Punk coming out to Miseria Cantare was the highlight of the night for me. I popped huge for it, and it made me feel 10 years old again. You were 10 years old when he was using that mute. Well, now you made me feel old. I was a lot older than 10. Kid Hunger. AEW sure knows how to make their pay-per-views feel special. Very good show overall. Good luck, WrestleMania. Well, competition brings out the best in people, right? I would hope that they are extra motivated now to put on the best show possible. Regardless of whether there was an AEW pay-per-view, it's WrestleMania. They should always feel inspired to want to put on the best show possible. But that card, as it currently stands, does not inspire a whole lot of confidence. Doar, Punk's Ring of Honor entrance got an HD remake. Anti-M Bishop. Hey, Solo Monster, Miseria Cantare in 2022 made me mental. The show was amazing. Pay-per-view of the year so far. All the best. Well, I mean, it's been a short year, so it is the pay-per-view of the year so far, but we're not even the full 3 months in yet. Samoan Fan 101. I thought Shivani was going to bring out the Yeti. That's the Yeti. You have to say it the right way. It's the Yeti. Nayef Al-Safar, thank you for the $4.99. And for sharing that awesome photo with me by email the other day. Dry chicken without flavor. It's highly doubtful, but if Tony Khan wants to sign entire members of Hit Row to AEW, AJ Francis will need to kiss so much booty. Yeah, I don't think AJ Francis is getting a welcome into AEW. I think he might actually still be attached to that WWE Hidden Treasure show, even though he's no longer working for WWE. I don't know. I think he might be coming back for that show. I forgot where I heard that, but yeah, they don't need top dollar. They don't need top dollar in AEW. Gary, Mr. Koschuk here dropping $6 in Super Chat. Hook could be a megastar, so buy or sell. Hook against Danielson or Hook against Darby? Which match hypes you more? Oh, Hook against Danielson. Sign me the fuck up for that one. Holy shit, yeah. That's the match I want to see. I like it. We've got Justin Smith dropping $2. Talk to TK. Darby is a bad influence on Sting. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe the issue is Darby. His son is a bad influence for him. Mac 2. I don't know what happened to Mac 1, but we got Mac 2. Love you, brother. The crowd seemed like they were sitting on their hands most of the night. Almost needed a match like the tornado tag earlier in the show to wake them up. What are your thoughts? I don't think it would have made a difference. I think it was just the length of the show. I mean, you could have put that match on first, and they still would have been, I think, pretty quiet for the later matches. You know, it's a lot. Look, it's not even just the length of the show, right? It's not even so much what's the difference between 4 hours and 3 hours. You look up and down the card, it's just nonstop action and nonstop near falls and nonstop high spots and dives and kickouts. So you get that in almost every single match. Even on a 3 hour show, it gets exhausting. Like, I would hate to go on last in the main event on an AEW pay-per-view. If I were the champion and I had to go on last at the end of the show, I would fucking hate it. Having to follow all that shit that comes before. You know, that's not an easy thing to do to keep people's interest. So, it's not just the actual length of the show, it's what they're doing in every match. GCC305, $10 super chat here at work. Didn't watch the show, but I can always count on your reviews. Keep up the good work. I'm hearing AEW Revolution was a badass show. You heard correct. Craving the sweet release of death. One of my favorite super chatters. Hook's hair for AEW champion and Hook for TNT champion. You know, I had proposed Hook for the TNT title, but the more I think about it, I think it's going to be Hook for the FTW title. I think that's the way to go. It just makes sense. You know, his father is the one who created the FTW belt. Ricky Starks has it. When the time comes and there's a fracture within Team Taz, Hook's going to get that FTW belt. And Hook walking around with the, you know, fuck the world belt with a fuck the world expression on his face, which he has in every match, it just makes sense. So forget the TNT belt for now. The belt that he's going to be getting sooner than later, I think, is the FTW belt. In fact, he's probably the one to take it from Starks. Simi Valley, $10 super chat. When is a good time to break up Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, and how far in the singles division can each of them go? I think they could do well. I think both of them could do well, more so Jungle Boy. I think Jungle Boy could be a world champion one day. I don't see that happening anytime in the near future. But there are guys like him and Darby who, even though they're physically smaller, they're just, first of all, they're really good, and they're over. You know, with this audience, they see them as superstars. That's why they call them the young pillars of the company. I think Jungle Boy is in that same conversation. So, I think Jungle Boy could be a world champion one day. I don't see it happening with Luchasaurus, but I think it'll happen one day with Jungle Boy. He's the one who has the higher ceiling, I think, in the singles division. Luchasaurus is only going to go so far if he's got a dinosaur mask on his face. If he sheds the mask one day and completely overhauls the gimmick, you know, could he get over as an athletic big man on his own? I think he could, but I think Jungle Boy absolutely has the higher ceiling. Which is funny, because Luchasaurus being taller is actually closer to the ceiling than, you know, Jungle... Well, anyway. Craving the sweet release of death. Seems like Darby is a bad influence on Sting. Fried chicken without flavor. Forget BDSM or dominatrix. CM Punk and MJF turned this dog collar match into a torture chamber. CM Punk chops the snake off his head. Do me a favor. Please don't mention BDSM in the same sentence again with CM Punk or MJF. Thank you. Nathan Cadia, can we normalize 3-hour pay-per-views again? Thumbs down. Wow, Nathan gives it a thumbs down. Yeah, Tundar in the chat makes a good point about Jungle Boy. He can't cut a promo. He's gotten a little bit more comfortable. I've seen some of these backstage segments. Maybe Christian's working with him. He does seem a little more comfortable, but yes, he is not a great promo. I hope that that will come with time. If it doesn't, then it's going to make things a lot harder for him as far as, you know, advancing in the singles ranks. Because he's got to be able to talk. It's not his strong suit right now. I agree. Tuxedo T. Servo. Have to be up early, but we'll watch tomorrow. You had just mentioned Regal earlier today, so that was good timing. Dylan Hensley, $10. So AEW gave us a great pay-per-view as always. Meanwhile, WWE's WrestleMania has Logan Paul, Knoxville, retired Austin, and old-ass Vince. This is why I tell people that I am a wrestling fan and not a WWE fan. Well, Vince McMahon is not wrestling a WrestleMania. We can debunk that. And Steve Austin isn't wrestling either, and I never thought he was. But he'll be there. I'm not going to hate on Stone Cold making an appearance. He's fucking Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's going to be fine with me. If you want Stone Cold Steve Austin, the glass shatters, he comes down to the ring at WrestleMania in Texas, doles out some stunners. I can't hate on that. I'm going to pop for that just like you are. But Logan Paul and the others, I agree. Liquid Sharingan. I love watching Punk, Brian Cole, and the rest, but I'm more invested in Sammy, Darby, MJF, and the younger talent, and I want to see more of them. Well, I think you'll be seeing a lot more of them. So, that'll give you something to look forward to. Dry chicken without flavor. Double or nothing in Las Vegas, plus nightclubs equals it's a private party gold mine for Tony Khan and AEW. Isaiah and Mark Quinn could be the faces of Double or Nothing. Good looks, Donnie, with the $9.99. Solid show. So much talent. Excited for the years to come. Regal was a nice surprise. Keep up the awesome work. Thank you, sir. Let's see here. Simi Valley, $20 super chat. Who do you think should take the title off Hangman Page? That is a very good question. And my answer to you would have been MJF. But as I think about the idea that I proposed, I kind of like the idea of having MJF win the title off of CM Punk. And to do that, you might have to have a babyface versus babyface match and have Punk beat Hangman. The only reason I would do that, because CM Punk doesn't need to have the belt, but the only reason I would consider doing that is for that very reason, because you could bring it back to the MJF story. And it works so well if Punk is the one that he takes the championship from. I like that story. So I might have Punk be the one to do it. Just so we can get it on MJF a few months later. Matthew, what's going on, Matthew? Says, I disagree. I think Jon Moxley is next in line for the world title. You could be right. I don't think he's going to win it. You know, win it back, but you could be right. Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo. What a fucking name. Holy shit. Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo. Just got back from the show with my son. Awesome night. Cole should have won. Best match as a total package was the dog collar match for sure. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the show. Hey, Steven Escalante in the chat. What's going on, man? Yeah, definitely check out the rest of it tomorrow. And don't forget to check out 746 from earlier today. I did 2 hours. Talked about a lot of stuff on the podcast today. Chris Manson with the five. Huge pot for Regal at my theater. Regal Theaters. It was a fun experience. I recommend watching at a theater for anyone on the fence next time. How much did that cost you? Actually, it probably cost you less to watch it in the theater than it cost me to pay for it on Bleacher Report. It cost me $50. But it was worth it. Yeah, I'm so used to just spending the $5 or $10 on the network and watching all the WWE shows. But, you know, again, AEW, they do pay-per-views 4 times a year. You know, the pay-per-views they do, they give you your money's worth. Joey Jojo Jr. is a Simpsons reference? Well, that tells you the extent of my Simpsons knowledge. I had no idea. I thought he just came up with that on his own. But apparently it is a Simpsons reference. Can full of memes. $5 super chat. How do you feel about Paige acting like a heel by the end of the match? After they went off the air, apparently Paige apologized for going to a dark place. I didn't see it that way. I really didn't see it that way. I didn't see him coming off as a heel to me, especially when he shook the man's hand after the match was over. So I disagree. I didn't see it that way. Although I will say, if he is going to go heel, then it makes the idea of CM Punk beating him for the belt that much more realistic. Cold Snap. Mox wrestles. All ex-WWE can't make their own stars. Adam Page wrestles. Who the hell's this nobody? Where are the stars? Well, welcome to the internet wrestling community, my friend. You will find a great deal of hypocrisy all over the place. Jared M., $35 super chat. Loves seeing Regal show up. Can't believe the hate the E-drones giving Tony Khan for bringing him in, acting like he wasn't worth a shit in WWE for the last 20 years. Well, that's what they do. That's what they do. It's going to be very funny if Cody Rhodes ends up coming back to AEW, because a lot of those, the really, like you say, the drones, the E-drones, right? The psychotic ones. When Cody was coming to WWE, they were rolling out the red carpet for him. The prodigal son returns, right? Now that Cody might not be coming into WWE, you watch all the hate that Cody is going to start getting again from those same people. HBKC83, in your opinion, how does having 4 pay-per-views a year, how is it a good and a bad thing? Also, do you prefer 4 a year or more? It's a good thing in that I think it definitely makes the pay-per-views feel more special. So that's number one. I also think that it gives stories more time to develop on television. The negatives, they feel the need to go 4 hours every single time and cram a whole lot of shit because they just don't do that many of them each year. And so that's the drawback. You end up having crowds that might be tired by the end. They might not react to matches the same way they would if you shaved 2 or 3 matches off the card. It's a trade-off. I think that I don't have an issue with having 4 events a year. I think five or six would probably be better. I think they could get one more on the calendar, but I'd rather have 4 than, one a month. I think 1 a month is overkill. I mean, it's good for me as a content creator. I mean, the more events, the more content, the more reviews, but even I have my limits. I sometimes less is more. Less is more. Darth Panic, is there any truth to the rumor that WWE is going to take legal action against AEW over Jeff Hardy? No. Those are rumors, and I don't see anything coming out of it, because how are they going to prove anything? Because Jeff Hardy did an interview and said, I'm going to AEW. I said on my podcast, a very easy way around that. Jeff Hardy said he was going to go to AEW. He was going to go to AEW to be in the crowd. He was going to go as a guest. He was very excited to attend his first AEW show. There you go. Problem solved. There you go. It's much ado about nothing. Maruthi Ram, thank you for the super chat. I am so proud I am an AEW fan, he says. Steven Escalante, thank you for the $1.99. I appreciate it. Do not pass go. $5. With all of these stellar trios matches AEW keeps pumping out, you would think that they would have created a trios title by now. Oh, they are. There's a trios title coming, I promise you. It's got to be a little more patient. Oven Heart. Oven Heart? Oven Heart goes with the Bread Heart. I sense a food theme here. I sense a food theme here. We have Bread Heart. We have Oven Heart. Now we gotta come up with a name for the Bulldog. Bulldog Brownie, maybe? Something like that. Come up with foodie names for everybody. But anyway, your super chat is incorrect. So there's your answer. And Indigo with the $5 super chat. Hey, Solid Monster, much respect. Revolution was one of the best AEW pay-per-views so far. Not the best. This was, he says, this was our WrestleMania, another awesome live stream. Thank you, sir. Indigo, I hope you're doing well. Indigo's always with us. Indigo's joining us on every single stream. we got another one coming in here. This might be the last one here. Alvin Johnson, $25. All in all, I really like this show. The matches were either awesome or solid. For me, really enjoyable experience, even though I had to watch on Bleacher Report. Well, so did I. So I didn't have any glitches or issues. I don't know if other people had problems. Ted Evans in the chat, how many people do I get pod for WrestleMania? I don't know what that means. You mean during the WrestleMania? I think last year, you know, two nights of WrestleMania, I think both nights we had, what did we have, 3,500, 4,000, I think, on each night? Something like that. It gets crazy WrestleMania weekend. So, no matter how good or bad the lineup is, the people come out for WrestleMania. It could be people who aren't watching WrestleMania. You just want to hear the reviews, but yeah, WrestleMania weekend is going to be a big one next month. Yeah, so a lot of people had lag issues, I guess, with Bleacher Report. I guess I was lucky this time because I didn't have any issues this time. Granny Hell Yeah, channel member for 8 months, says Stu Hart, S-T-E-W. Stu Hart. That's very clever. Stu Hart. That's a good one. That is a good one. We've got K Freakin' Aaron, a.k.a. Dr. Scorpio. I enjoyed the show tonight. It says, can't wait for my excitement to turn into disappointment and boredom by watching Raw tomorrow. Great review as usual. And Biblical Adrian, when will you attend your next AEW live show? I don't know. I'm sure I'll be back. I had a lot of fun at the first Double or Nothing in Vegas 3 years ago. And was that my last one? That might have been my last AEW show. It might have been my only AEW show, come to think of it. But yeah, I'll venture out again at some point. I don't know when, though. I don't know when. You know, don't forget, we're getting very close to May, and the Owen Hart tournaments for the men and the women are going to be starting probably in about a month and a half. 6-7 weeks, probably. Sometime around then. We have the Owen coming soon. The finals are going to be taking place on the Double or Nothing show, and Martha Hart will be there. I don't know if Owen's kids will be there, but Martha Hart will be there to present the trophy to the winners. The Outside Line. Been a Sound Off legend, channel member for 8 months. Look at you. Look at the big brain on you. Smart guy. Best pay-per-view completely since WrestleMania 17. This is my second pay-per-view of all time. Wow. Wow. That is high praise. Randy Cabbage. Randy Cabbage. That's good. I don't like cabbage, though. Jim the Yamville Neidhart. That's not bad. That's not bad. I like this. We have to come up with food names for all these people. I like Stu Hart. I will say Stu Hart might be the best one tonight so far. After Bret Hart. I like Stu Hart. Steven, I wouldn't rank the show. Look, the show was great. I don't want to sit here and start ranking them. It was an excellent show. Where it ranks on the list is entirely up to you to decide. I don't think it was the best AEW pay-per-view ever. I mean, All Out last year in 2021, pretty hard to top. But I thought this was an excellent show overall. Melon Hart. Alvin, we could do better than that. SyncFan01 with the super chat says Davey Bun Smith. Anthony says Nutella Neidhart. Nutella's great, by the way. Nutella's fucking great. You want to do some Be the Booker and then we'll get out of here? 2 o'clock in the morning? Why not? You know, we have our own. I mentioned the Owen. We have our own March Madness going on here. I'm going to be filling out tournament brackets for Be the Booker on the men's side and the women's side with a lot of these matches that I've been randomly picking. And so we're about midway through. I need 8 matches on the men's side, and then I could put a bracket together, and then 8 matches for the women. I think I have 4 of each so far. So why don't we pick 2 more? Let's do a little Be the Booker tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Special late night edition of Be the Booker here on the stream. We will kick things off here with the men. We'll do that first and see how it goes. Okay, you got a lot of WWE and AEW talent and legends. Let's see who we land on first. Oh, look at this. Look at this. This is appropriate here tonight. Pentagon. Pentagon Dark. Actually, that's not Pentagon Dark's getup, but Penta El Cero Miedo is the first choice here on the men's side. Let's see who he's going to be stepping into the ring. We're trying to book main events when we do this, by the way. Do we consider these matches main event caliber? Let's see. Penta one-on-one. I thought it was Asuka for a second because she's on my screen. Hey, Mitch Mayhem, thanks for the sub. Penta against JBL. I don't know. You know what? I'm not going to buzz that match. I'm not going to buzz that match. It's an interesting matchup. I'm not going to drop the buzzer on that one. I'm going to allow that one. Let's move over to the women. I'm not going to give that any sound effect. I'm kind of neutral on that match, but let's see if we do better with the women. Wait, you don't like Pentagon against JBL? Look at this. I just picked her the other night. Lacey Von Erich. What the hell is with Lacey Von Erich popping up in this thing? Lacey Von Erich. One-on-one with Bianca Belair. You know, anything with Lacey Von Erich inside the ring, I'm sorry, I gotta do it. I gotta do it. Lacey Von Erich is terrible. Not even Bianca Belair, I think, could save that. So there you go. Bianca Belair and Lacey Von Erich is going to be added to the bracket. So that means Lacey Von Erich is going to have 2 matches in this bracket, by the way. And Pentagon against JBL. How many votes do you think that's going to get? Probably not too many, right? Well, you guys are going to vote once the tournament brackets are put together in a few weeks, so keep an eye out for that. Oh, boy. What a night. Solemn Monster loves Lacey. Yeah, she's a pretty girl, but, you know, in the ring, she was the shits. That's why she's not wrestling anymore. Oh. Prawn Michaels. Prawn Michaels against Bret Hart. You should see some of the names I have, though, on those Be the Booker. We haven't even scratched the surface of some of the names in that Be the Booker segment, so there's a lot of fun ones that we could still come up with. Are there old school wrestlers in Be the Booker? Absolutely. Didn't you see the Ultimate Warriors in there? I mean, there's a lot of legends and old school wrestlers in there. Absolutely. Big Flan Vader. Well, now we're just getting ridiculous now. All right, look, guys. Thank you for staying up late with me. This has been fun. It's always fun to talk about a fun pay-per-view like this. And I'm going to be back with you live on Wednesday night. We get to talk about the post-Revolution edition of Dynamite. So, and we'll do more Be the Booker. So that'll be coming up on Wednesday. No stream on Friday. I've got the House of Glory show Friday night at the NYC Arena. Very excited. The Lucha Bros against the Briscoes for the first time ever. I get to call that main event as part of the announce team. So very much looking forward to that. We got Biff Busick coming in for the first time, one-on-one against Low Key. We got Taya Valkyrie coming in to take on our women's champion, Natalia Markova. So a lot of cool shit going down at the NYC Arena on Friday night, but that means no SmackDown or Rampage stream this week, so. Do check out episode 746, two-hour podcast I dropped on all of you, I guess technically yesterday. Talk about a lot of different things, including the Vince McMahon interview on Pat McAfee's show. So definitely go back and check that out. Again, thank you for Hershey Helmsley. You're still doing the food names. We'll continue this on Wednesday. But again, thank you again. Hit that like button on the way out, and I will see you guys back here for the Dynamite stream on Wednesday night. Until then, take care, guys.